Under Section 34B of the 1942 Broadcasting Act, the ABC must provide fair and equal airtime to both sides of the political spectrum. Therefore, in accordance with a High Court directive, Triple J is compelled to broadcast a show presented by conservative youth. So, would you please welcome Sterling Addison, Sydney Grammar GPS debating champion, and Tom Tomlinson, Mining Industry Bachelor of the Year 2003, as they finally bring an unbiased political voice to the ABC and attempt to restore the balance.
Yes, good evening and welcome to this Restoring the Balance for another week. We welcome, listening to tonight's broadcast, Mr. John Salmon of the Australian National Flag Association, Mr. Barry Hunt of the United Kingdom Settlers Association, and Miss Jill Baker St. Ives of the Monarchist League of Canada. On the program this evening, we will be chatting to the outgoing Premier of South Australia, the Honourable Mike Rann. Also, the intemperate tweeter and refugee advocate, Mr. Julian Burnside QC. We'll also talk with the Executive Director of Australians for Constitutional Monarchy, Jay Martinkiewicz. As always, I'm joined by my co-host in this Fight Back for Free Speech by young national, Mr. Tom Tomlinson. Good evening, Tom.
Yes, good evening, Sterling. It's another big week in politics. Hopefully we won't be shut down Bolt style mid-show this evening. But we've got to talk quickly about the big 5-0. Julia Gillard turned 50, Sterling. If that's a real age, mate.
Well,
no, I think I'm the only one who demanded a birth certificate for this bloody party.
Well,
she's lied
so
much to us, mate.
Well, I put it to you, Tom, that she only agreed to turn 50 after getting advice to do so from a focus group in Western Sydney.
And, exactly, mate.
And furthermore to that, Tom, I would add that turning 50 is nothing more than a cynical attempt to woo the grey vote, and I condemn her decision to turn 50.
Mate, did you see what she got for a present? I mean, you know, she got, what was it, a cavoodle.
A cavoodle, now, a dog.
I know I'm not meant to say this, but I'm sick of these gay dog breeds.
Yes.
You've got your cockapoos, you've got your labradoodles.
Yes.
And, mate, any surprise you got a hybrid dog, mate? Just like a government, 10% ALP, 90% Greens.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. It's a point well made, Tom, when we see the freakish ALP Greens crossbreed that is running the country, which is what you were talking about. And I would extend the analogy even further by saying that the economy is playing dead. We have a health system that won't heal. And if Julia Gillard has her way, the media will have to sit up and beg.
I tell you who Julia Gillard comes to heal to, mate. That's Bob Brown.
Yes.
Mate, he's got her on a leash.
Well,
you know, more appropriate dog breeds, if you ask me, for Julia Gillard. Sterling, you ready?
Yes.
What about a cock-up spaniel?
Yes.
That would have been good. What about lost control of our border collie?
Indeed.
What about our budgets in the red setter?
Yes.
Who got her those, mate?
Yes.
Brady got us something, though, I hear, mate.
Well,
he laminated the last three news polls for her to put over a mantelpiece.
Well, indeed. As she was cutting the cake, she found herself short of a knife. And that's when Rudd turned up and said, "Here, grab the one in my back."
Yes. Exactly,
now,
mate.
Now,
what about the candles on the cake, Sterling?
Well, I condemn the candles on the cake.
Surely the emissions, she should have had little wind turbines on there, shouldn't she, Sterling?
Yes, well, was she paying a carbon tax on the emission of the candles?
Exactly. Well, maybe we'll all need candles when the carbon tax comes in. We won't be able to afford the power bills.
Indeed. It'll be the new dark age. It'll be the new dark age. Well, just to return briefly to the topic of the dog that she received, Tom, I saw an interview with the poor breeder who was clearly coerced into taking one of the puppies, stolen generation style, from its litter and transferring it to Canberra. And the breeder was interviewed, and the quote from the breeder goes as follows. She said, "Dogs are great for people in high-profile jobs, because their love is unconditional, they never judge, and they will always love their master." I was thinking, so the choice was to either get Gillard a dog or a Fairfax journalist.
Restoring the balance.
We are of the right, we have the right, we are right.
This is Restoring the Balance on Triple J. You're with young Liberal myself, Sterling Addison, young National, Tom Tomlinson. That was Josh Pike, "The World is a Picture." Shortly, we will be speaking to the British-born New Zealand resident who is the outgoing Premier of South Australia. His name is Mr. Mike Rann.
Sterling, very disappointing news this week. The wettest, I reckon one of the wettest ALP ministers, Stephen Smith, yes. Came out, said women can now act in frontline positions in the ADF, mate. Did you see that?
Yes, yes. Women deployed to the front line.
I mean, mate, you know, I know I'm going to be, you know, I'll probably be ripped off air for saying this, but soon the ADF will be full of chicks and gay men, let's face it.
Yes.
Our whole army could be distracted by a giant airdrop of WHO magazines. That's how bad it is getting, Sterling. And look, it's not just about physical strength, mate, and don't think I'm sexist when I say this, okay?
Yes.
But Sterling, you need to be quick in the army. What happens? What happens if Al-Qaeda attack at night? You know how long chicks take to get ready. Okay, we'll be ambushed for sure. Yes. They'll be touching up their lippy and whacking on foundation while the blokes are getting wiped out. Okay,
yes.
And this isn't Toke and Sterling. You know they're moody certain times of the month, mate. Okay, who's going to want to go out and patrol with them? You'll ask them to outflank someone and they'll snap your head off.
Yes.
I reckon half the blokes in the army would rather take their chances with the Taliban.
Yes, well,
they'll be using radios to make personal calls, catch up on gossip. They won't drive a tank or F-18 unless there's a glove box or vanity mirror on the sun visor, mate. And that's not sexist, Sterling. That's a fact.
Yes, all well-reasoned, Tom, and all beyond any shadow of doubt, of course. My fear, the reasonable fear, I think, shared by every good citizen, is that we may not find or be able to recruit female warriors of the calibre of the great female warriors of the past, such as Tamar of Georgia, or Zenobia, or Joan of Arc, or Ahotep I, or Fu Hao, the well-known consort of King Wuding, or Artemisia I of Korea, or the Trung sisters, or Boadicea, or Gudi. These are all well-known female warriors. I would worry that that we will not be able to match them. Of course, on the plus side, Tom, you would have to admit, it does open up opportunities for women in the ADF to be either bullied or sexually harassed in a whole new areas, such as the infantry or the artillery or in naval clearance diving, which, as you pointed out, Tom, Navy clearance divers as females, they will think it's a shoe clearance store that they're clearing out. They're going underwater to snap up some bargains.
Well, mate, you forgot to mention Lara Croft, the Tomb Raider. There is one of my favourite female warriors. I've never heard of the other one, Sterling. But, you know, look, and let's face it, chicks are going to distract the men, okay? You don't want to be checking out someone's ass while firing off a round of artillery, Sterling. That's a recipe for disaster.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
The most prized thing in the Australian Army used to be the Victoria Cross. Now it's going to be bloody Victoria's Secret.
Yes,
indeed. I mean, that's where we're heading, Sterling.
Well,
I concede, as you do, that an all-male army isn't perfect. There's the odd case of recreational sodomy and rump something now and then. But there's no need to bring in the bra-burning brigade.
Well,
saving Private Ryan, Sterling. It's not saving Private Meg Ryan.
Yes.
It's full metal jacket. It's not full tapered bedazzled jacket. I'm angry. You can tell I'm fired up, Sterling.
You are.
You're not meant to say this on the ABC, but we're the only show with the guts to say it.
Well, it's freedom of speech, and we should enjoy the privilege while the window is narrowly closing. I would point out to you, though, Tom, that that France has had an all-female military since 1940. It's a good point, often overlooked. You did, of course, mention cost. There will be an increased cost. I point to the necessary development of a field-deployable tactical combat perfume that women will no doubt demand. But I do make this point in speaking to my fiancée Penny about this, Tom, that I doubt somebody like Penny would enjoy spending all day with men who wear uniforms, and then at the end of a long pack march, having to shower naked with these men who are at the peak of their physical development. What woman would enjoy that?
Yes, that's a good point, Sterling, and you know, one I'm sure that Penny sincerely believes in, mate. As long as you believe it, that's all that matters.
Restoring the Balance Re-Education Tutorial Number 2, The Big Day Out.
The Big Day Out is an annual music festival held in Australia and New Zealand. It's known for its eclectic mix of alternative and mainstream acts and left-leaning tendencies, in particular when it tried to ban the Australian flag. However, The Big Day Out is an extremely profitable venture and usually sells out its entire run. As such, Restoring the Balance calls for the Big Day Out to be immediately incorporated. floated on the stock exchange and a board put in place to decide the lineups and direction of future festivals so profits and dividends to shareholders can be maximised.
Restoring the balance.
How have you supported the American Alliance today?
That's the Aston Shuffle there, Won't Get Lost. If you ever get lost at the ABC, you just turn left. That's compulsory in this building. This is Restoring the Balance with myself, Young National Tom Tomlinson, Young Liberal Sterling Addison. Coming up, your mailbag issues. You've hit us up on Facebook this week, and we're going to answer your questions, Sterling.
Well, we have many questions, obviously, to answer, and we should do so before our show is shut down for speaking truth to power, for that is our greatest sin on this show. Now, Tom, I don't know if you've been following international events, they not being an area of interest to those in the National Party, but no doubt you would be aware that there is an ongoing fiscal crisis unfolding in Greece.
I've only done a few Kentucky tours through Greece, Sterling, and yes. Look, I don't remember a lot of it. I went to a couple of islands. One of them was gay. That's all I remember. Well, people told me it was sort of gay.
Yes, it's a whole island, was it? Quarantined, or was it perhaps the island of Lesbos?
Rumors. That's it, Lesbos. Yes. Yeah, yes, we made lots of jokes on the bus about that. It was very amusing.
Yes, I'm sure it was. Well, those of us who collect antiquities would certainly be eyeing the current value of our Greek urns.
What's a Greek urn?
Well, not as much as he used to before the crisis unfolded, Tom.
Oh, right. This is Greece's broke, mate. Is that what you're talking?
Yes, indeed. Yes, it is. The situation as it exists at the moment is not particularly good. Greece is considering defaulting on its debts. It owes many tens of billions of dollars to other countries in the European zone. And it is currently sticking its hand out for more aid from principally Germany, Tom. So we do worry, of course, that the market may be aware of an imminent default, but it still has no idea of the entire credit and counterparty risk in the financial system. And Tom, I think an even an orderly default of Greek debt, if deemed a credit event, could lead to the seizing of the credit markets and another recession. So it could be exacerbated also due to the reluctance of Europe to set up a troubled asset relief program, which I urge Europe to do.
No, but, I mean, you're basically saying the joint is broke. That's what you're saying, Sterling. I mean, you're talking about defaults and all this sort of crap, but they're broke. The Greeks are skint. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. There's very little money over there at the moment. And austerity measures have been imposed by the Greek government to no great popularity of the population, I will say, Tom. They are shirking their duty to be frugal, which is ironic if one recalls the reputation of the Spartans, Tom.
Yes,
who were very simple living people. And I would urge all Greeks to emulate their Spartan forebears by bathing their newborns in wine to prove their toughness, abandoning the weak on the hillsides, commencing military training at 7 years of age, and making one's wife resemble a man on one's wedding night. It's not that much to ask.
That sounds very weird to me, Sterling. That sounds like something would happen in inner city Melbourne, if you ask me. Chicks becoming blokes.
Well, indeed, it does happen there. But also, this was a time-honored tradition in Sparta, which once ruled vast swathes of territory in a way that modern Greece is clearly unable to. But the problem, and I urge all Triple J listeners to consider the real victims in all of this, and I'm going to paint a very dreadful picture as I do so. In this kind of crisis, Tom, it is truly the innocent who suffer. And I'm talking about Greek stockbrokers and bankers. Now, some of them may be ruined and some of them may seek to throw themselves in despair from their high-rise offices. It's condescending, and it is literally condescending. The only thing that will break his fall, Tom, is a cushion of euro sent from Germany.
I understand what you're saying, but, you know, most of the Greeks I know, mate, they put their bloody savings in the back garden in a coffee jar. So, I'm surprised that there's Greek banks. And B, if you've ever had a Greek tradesman rock up to your place, mate, the amount that bloke charges, I'm surprised that they're also broke.
Yes.
Mate, because, you know, they're always adding 10 or 20% if they're doing your pool or rendering your house or whatever they're doing. All right, it's always less for cash. Okay, so I would propose to you, Sterling, that the buggers are burying it in their back garden. It's got nothing to do with them, the government and austerity measures. Yes. I'd excavate in their back garden. They've probably got biscuit tins full of the stuff.
Yes.
That's what I'd say, Sterling. That's what the Nationals would say. Dig up the gardens.
Again, I cast my mind back and try to think of the last great National Treasurer who had his hands on the fiscal levers of power in this country. And honestly, can't think of one.
Dig up the gardens, Sterling. That's what, dig up the, look, you know, behind the beds, in the wardrobes. That's what the Greeks do. They bury their savings. They don't trust the banks.
Are you one of the many people who love playing Halo 3 while listening to Question Time in the House of Reps? Then why not combine both and visit politicalgamer.com.au to download some of the country's best politically themed video games. Steal an election and a few Commonwealth cars in Gillard Theft Auto, or attempt to cast an informal vote in the Senate when you play Donkey Wong. You've heard of Sonic the Hedgehog, now play Abbott the Wedge Dog, where you try to cynically wedge the government on every important issue. If you're a fan of graphic violence, there's the R-rated Call of Duty 4, Rudd's Return, and Street Fighter 5, where Anthony Albanese conducts running battles with 2GB listeners in Western Sydney. Buy two games and we'll chuck in for no extra cost Pokemon, Mortal Kombat, Xenopong, and the Sega Carbon Tax Rally. Politicalgamer.com.au. Just when you thought you couldn't get any nerdier. Restoring the balance.
We stand for fairness, free trade, and the Australian anthem.
Triple J!
Restoring the balance on Triple J with young National Tom Tomlinson, myself, young Liberal Sterling Addison. We heard from the winter people there. Wishing bone. Well, thanks to global warming, winter will be a thing of the past, will it not? We may speak about such topics with Jay Martinkiewicz, who is the Executive Director of the Australians for Constitutional Monarchy.
Now, Sterling, our next guest is the third longest Premier of South Australia behind Bannon and Playford, which should be a cause for celebration, but unfortunately, he's from the ALP. He joins us now. It is the Honourable Mike Rand. Mike, look, I have to take my hat off to you, mate, first up, because although, obviously, as the ALP, most of your policies are poppycock, at least you had the good sense to appoint a National to your cabinet. Tell us how that came about.
She's fantastic. Her name's Carlene Maywald, leader of the National Party in this state. And I thought, you know, sometimes it's terrific. We had, in 2006, the biggest majority ever, but we actually asked Carlene to stay on in cabinet because she made such a good contribution. So we had the head of the National Party in a Labor cabinet, and we had the head of, we also had an independent Liberal in the Rory McEwen in the Labor cabinet. So we all got on well, which was good. I think people out there kind of like the fact that, you know, people actually work together rather than some of the toxic poison that we currently see in politics in Australia. But no offence to your mate in Speedos.
Well, look, I've sent an email to Julia Gillard suggesting that Barnaby Joyce, Mike, in that spirit, might make a good foreign minister, and it would solve the Rudd problem. Can you see Barnaby Joyce sort of, you know, addressing the UN?
You could see Barnaby. You could see Barnaby in the Middle East peace talks, coming up with some unusual ideas to bring Arab and Israeli together. And I can see that. I actually think that's something that no one has yet thought of, so all power to Triple J.
Yes, well, of course, the peace process has been commandeered by simpering fops of the left, which is why the peace process hasn't moved forward one iota. Mike Rand, Premier of South Australia, I put it to you that the Howard government, when it was in power, drew upon a deep reservoir of conservative talent from South Australia. We had Robert Hill in defence, Amanda Vanstone in immigration, Alexander Downer in foreign affairs, and Nick Minchin in finance. The current cabinet seems not so fulsomely packed with South Australian talent. Why does the ALP hate the festival state?
Julia Gillard is a South Australian, so
well,
she was brought up here and raised here, and went to school, went to Unley High, which is where my kids went to school. But you have to say, Alexander Downer, at least he's now, you know, I mean, Alex brought an unusual flair to the leadership of the Liberal Party when he was there. And as you know, I think anyone who's seen Keating, the musical, can never really see Alexander Downer in the same light again. So we miss him. We miss him on the world stage.
He was a very successful foreign minister.
when he was at the UN, and there was, I remember him saying to the Indonesians over East Timor, you jolly well stay out. So I mean, it's kind of those sort of interventions that, and I think are memorable. It was, you know, like his equivalent of the Gettysburg Address.
Mike, you know, I have to take my hat off. You have done a lot for mining in South Australia with Roxby Downs. Obviously, you're extending that. But we at the Young Nationals were disappointed that you've stopped mining, you know, in the Flinders Ranges around the Arkaroola area, because obviously there's a lot of uranium there. And look, we think that it would be great if SA went yellow cake crazy. You know, with all the alluvial uranium there, it's easy to get out, Mike. We can ship it off and not worry about it. I mean, is that something you would like to legislate just before you leave as Premier?
No, actually, look, I'm just letting you guys in because I know that, you know, there's it's just between us three girls. But the thing is that we're going to stop mining in our career, and that's going to be in my last week, because even Nick Minchin,
yes.
Nick Minchin went there and was so overwhelmed by the beauty that he's supporting our ban on mining in Arkaroola. But we have got about 50% of the world's uranium, so there's plenty to go around.
Well, I would urge you, Mike, whilst building submarines in Adelaide, that you may consider installing nuclear power plants into them. Has this thought crossed your mind?
It hasn't yet. No, it was the first time it's been suggested. So I have to come onto this show more often in the next two and a half weeks. I've got less left.
Mike, you know, SA is a festival state, mate. And I know you have a lot of great festivals there, the Fringe, and you've got the festival ideas starting this weekend. I have to say, my favourite festival is the Tunarama Festival in Port Lincoln, when you can see a tuna toss, you can see a bloke with a massive frozen tuna chuck it across an oval. Have you been there, Mike? And, you know, is it something that you enjoy?
I have to say, look, I'm a bit of a WOMAD-y type, so you guys don't ever see you two down at WOMAD. And we're having another WOMAD. In fact, just we've got the Festival Ideas next weekend, and then the following weekend or so away, we're having two WOMADs a year. So I haven't yet been to Tunarama. That's something I thought I would save up for my retirement, you know. I'm not sure if they're frozen or not, the tunas, but they don't seem to mind. They don't seem to mind the tossing the tuna.
Well, I would suggest, Mike, for WOMAD, that these world musicians are put up at Woomera for the duration of their visit to South Australia, unless they have the proper immigration clearances.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It's interesting to say that, because I have seen leading conservatives in cheesecloth at WOMAD. Many of them in sort of disguise. Actually, it's quite a strange thing. You walk around WOMAD, there's a sort of feel of Woodstock. It's the age of Aquarius. But I'm told that even our Alex has been seen there with or without his fishnet.
That's an outrageous slur, and that will be edited from the broadcast. Mike, as you mentioned, you have but 2 weeks remaining as you steer the ship of state in South Australia. You are being uncustomarily graceful about it. What do you put that down to?
It's I've got sort of the vibe of dignity. That's what I've been trying to embrace. The vibe of dignity in the last 2.5 weeks. So the last couple of weeks I'm going to be hopefully approving the world's biggest mine, Olympic Dam, saving the Flinders Ranges, and doing a few other things in the arts. And we're going to be opening our new film studios, which is actually at the old psychiatric hospital. So
yes, well, that's a good fit for the arts community.
That's where the Bloody Greens have their conventions,
yes.
From what I hear. Hey, Mike, you know, I see it as a bit like you got Malthouse stepping down from Collingwood. You know, you've got Eddie Maguire in the background, you know, who's orchestrated that. Are you feeling comfortable about stepping down? I mean, you know, you have been popular at certain times in SA.
Yeah, we also go up and down, you know, it's a bit like radio ratings. But I'm looking forward to a new life. I'm sort of becoming a sub-elite athlete on bikes. I'm becoming a cyclist, and I've got a few other things planned as well. But certainly, you know, being sub-elite is a unique category that is quite almost all-embracing.
Yes.
Mike, something that just before you go that I'm very passionate about, and I know you've studied in New Zealand, is the scourge of New Zealand apples. And, you know, I've proposed on this show that Kiwi orchardists are doing unnatural things to the apples. They are full of disease. They are headed to the Adelaide Hills. You know, all sorts of measures need to be taken. I've called for a Bay of Pig-style military blockade there in the ditch, to stop the New Zealand apples coming over. As a, you know, guy who spent time in New Zealand but also Premier of South Australia, are you worried about this impending plague to our apple industry?
Well, as you know, it's kind of hard because I'm sort of a joint Australian-New Zealand citizen. And we've, you know, and so the apples, I mean, we're very fond of our sheep in New Zealand, very, very fond of our sheep. But in terms of the apples, what I reckon we should do is actually make that the decider of the World Cup, All Blacks versus Wallabies.
Yes.
Make that the decider of the whole apple situation. I reckon that'll be the fair way. You actually put it out there on the world stage for everyone to see.
Mike Rann, I give you this opportunity now to renounce your New Zealand citizenship.
Well, I tell you what, I've decided to keep it because, you know, I reckon there was a bit of a plot a few years ago to sort of a we called it, I don't know how to say this, but Australia West Island. We've got the North Island, South Island, and this is all part of a plot. So never been before revealed.
Well, you're saying we will be incorporated into a New Zealand hegemony. We will be a satrapy.
That's right. It's sort of New Zealand needs living space, or is the Lebensraum, living space. We need living space.
Yes, that's worked well before. We turn to history and we look at how well that's worked.
Don't use big words. Mike Rann, thank you very much for joining us. You've got a couple of weeks left as Premier of SA and hopefully the Nationals will lead SA government in the coming years.
We had a coalition here, and we showed that the coalition could work. The only place it's ever worked for progressive Australian politics is here in South Australia, the Nationals, Labor combined. And can I just say to, if I know Barnaby's a Triple J listener, as we are in this household, Barnaby, come home.
Wow, I don't know if old BJ is going to come back to South Australia,
well,
Mike.
Can I say on his behalf to you, Mike Rann, go home.
See you soon. Take care.
Mike Rann, thank you very much for joining us. This is Restoring the Balance with Tom and Sterling on Triple J.
Restoring the Balance, re-education tutorial number 46, the death penalty.
The death penalty is the sentence of death upon a person by judicial process as a punishment for an offence. Publicly, all presenters on Triple J oppose the death penalty. But on Friday nights, after the effects of too many free beers, wines, liquors, and in Richard Kingsmill's case, low-calorie breezes, many Triple J announcers rapidly change their tune. On three occasions lately, Caroline Tran has declared that hanging is too good for opponents of the death penalty, while brandishing a noose made by Father Bob Maguire.
Restoring the Balance.
Proudly using non-union labour.
That's rat versus possum. I'd pick a possum in that fight. Sterling, this is Tom Tomlinson, Young National on Triple J, Restoring the Balance. That track was by Fat Monk. I didn't think you were allowed to call anyone fat on Triple J. Surely it's vertically challenged or something like that.
Well, Monk refers to Abbott. Well, that will have to go.
Of course.
That will have to go.
It's a slur.
Yeah.
That's right. That's discrimination. We'll be talking to Julian Burnside about those sort of issues. QC, Sterling, you'll be pleased about that. That's coming up very soon.
Now, it's been quite an eventful week.
Our week. Our week. Our week.
Now, Tom, it's with a growing sense of trepidation that we approach the interview with the executive chairman of the Australians for Constitutional Monarchy. Speaking of such things, the Queen's visit. And I urge all Triple J listeners to look within themselves and ask themselves, what are they doing to adequately prepare for the impending visit of our head of state and the head of the Anglican Church?
Yes, it's a big deal for myself and a lot of the Young Nationals, Sterling, you know, the Queen's visit. I actually went to Wikipedia. You know, she's been here. She first came. I don't know, have you heard of Wikipedia, Sterling? It's quite a lot of information on that site.
Yes.
You know, the Queen made her first visit to Australia in 1954.
Yes.
And she covered so much ground that an estimated 75% of the entire population in Australia apparently saw her at least once.
Yes.
She bloody stalked the entire country when she first came here. That's how much she loved Australia.
She surveyed her subjects, her adoring subjects.
In the end, people were getting sick of her, Sterling. It's a bloody queen again. You go pop down to the shops, she'd be there waving, carrying on. You go to the movies at night, she'd be sitting next to you.
Not possible.
But, you know, the good thing is that she does love Australia. You know, and so I think that we should return that love, and we should, you know, all be thinking about what we could be doing to celebrate her visit, Stirling, because it could be a last, mate, couldn't it?
Well, let's not entertain that particular thought, but she, having been born in 1926, she is advancing in years. And it is your chance to but see her passing by. And we, of course, will love her until that very unfortunate day that she does die.
And we went out this week, Stirling, we asked Triple J listeners what they would be doing to celebrate the Queen's visit, and here's what they said.
I'd probably get a haircut, look a bit nicer for her. She's a top chick, you know. Got a few dogs. She's 80, what's she, 80-something now? She's doing well.
I'd probably just stock up on beer. That's all I'd do, really.
Well, being from Britain, possibly get the corgis in. Get corgis.
Probably, you know, just clean up the streets a bit and make it really nice for her. And I don't know, yeah, maybe organise a few events for her to look and see, yeah.
Throw a party. Big tea party with, like, big balloons everywhere of teacups. Raging big tea party.
Yeah. Clean up the country a bit more and make it more of a nicer place for her. Just celebrate. If she's going to be out here, just come out here, and it's an excuse to sort of throw a party and celebrate with the country and all, unite and all that sort of stuff.
Indeed, unite under the crown, and that is Australia at its best. I will say this, Tom, that we must, for the duration of the Queen's visit, we must move the homeless to detention centres. And if we're really serious about protecting the Queen from the Irish, we must enforce laws against public drunkenness. And this, in doing so, Tom, we will be able to detain Fenian fifth columnists from launching any attack against Her Majesty.
Oh, I don't mind drinking at PJ O'Brien, Stirling. So, you know, let's keep some of the Irish Catholics there, because they do like a drink, as do a lot of the people in the Young Nationals. But look, the Queen does like a bit of a flutter. You know, I'd like to sort of, you know, organise something for her at Moonee Valley.
Yes.
Maybe a couple of each-way bets on the Rugby World Cup. I mean, when it comes to mandatory pre-commitment, it stops at Buckingham Palace, from what I hear, Stirling. The Queen likes a little bit of a flutter, as do most Australians. It's why we love him. So I'd like to set up a little bit of a tote wherever she goes, maybe a bit of a starting price sort of thing going on, so she can just, you know, have a couple of each-way or quinellas or trifectas and, you know, just really get into the spirit, the spring carnival spirit.
Well, she should be able to do that before the demented Nick Xenophon has his way and Wilkie has their way, and they literally lunge and grab the money out of the Queen's hand as she goes to the betting office. But we were talking about this off air, and what I think the opportunity of the Queen's visit gives us is another opportunity to perhaps stage a musical festival along the lines of Parklife. And what I'm thinking here is a music festival that celebrates bands with names that evoke things majestic and royal and conservative.
Like a Regent Park Life.
Yes, indeed. And you could see bands like the Kings of Leon there.
Or, they're monarchists,
yes,
obviously.
Or the Police. Yes, the forces of law and order. What about Queens of the Stone Age? We could have Prince there, and instead of having the church, we could have the Church of England.
Exactly.
And then round it out with Washington.
Oh, look, I think we've got a great idea here. You could just have Queen, obviously. Freddie Mercury's not there, but I doubt that he really would have been into Queens at all.
Yes.
You know, we could have Queen there. Obviously get a few Australian country acts there. John Williamson, you know, he's a massive monarchist, so we could get him in there. I think that's a great, you know, and we could drape ourselves in Union Jacks. The CWA chicks can set up and have some preserves and scones going on there. We wouldn't have a mosh pit. We could have like a posh pit.
Yes, well said.
You know, where people can celebrate the aristocracy.
Indeed.
I think this is something we could stick this on our Facebook page and see how many likes we get for the Regent Park Life, Stirling.
Well, we will set about organising that now, and we will do it with taxpayers' dollars so that Triple J listeners will attend in their thousands.
And Stirling, we actually got in touch with the Queen ourselves.
Yes.
You know, as proud monarchists, and she actually left a message for us and our listeners. Here's what she said.
Hello, this is the Queen speaking to you from my home here at Windsor. Prince Philip and I are delighted to accept an invitation by my government and the Commonwealth to come to Australia on my 16th visit as your Queen. And on the eve of my Diamond Jubilee, I'm also delighted to extend a special greeting to Stirling and Thomas, who I'm told are doing an exemplary job as presenters of Triple J's programme, Restoring the Balance.
Restoring the Balance.
Let the free market decide.
That's The Living End, Song for the Lonely. This is Restoring the Balance with myself, Young National Tom Tomlinson, Young Liberal Stirling Addison. Coming up, Julian Burnside, QC Stirling.
I'm very excited at the moment, Tom, because at long last we've been able to get onto the show somebody from the Australians for Constitutional Monarchy. His name is Jay Martinkiewicz, and he is the executive director of that august institution. I will point out too, Tom, that he is also trained in martial arts, meaning he is possibly the only supporter of the Queen who would be able to battle his way in to the ABC building and battle his way out against union thugs ordered by the ABC unions to silence him. He joins us, however, on the phone. Good evening, Jay.
Good evening. How are you? And thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have a like-minded fellow traveller who is as big a fan of the stable constitutional monarchy that we have in Australia that affords us many of the benefits that countries overseas otherwise do not enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad that you're on the same page. And I think that it's very exciting to see such support, particularly amongst young people these days, for such a wonderful and established institution.
Now, Jay, how old are you, mate? And is it odd, do people sort of taken aback at your age, that you are into the monarchy?
Well, look, I'm 24 years old, and being 24 years old, I, as you would expect, am the youngest executive director to hold the position with Australians for Constitutional Monarchy. I suppose there have been some rather large shoes to fill with
yes.
the likes of Tony Abbott, etc., holding the position before me. But look, in terms of support amongst young people, certainly amongst my peers and from what we see in polls, it's the case that young people just aren't interested in these issues. It's not that they particularly support or want a republic, that they're just apathetic.
Jay, explain to us the genesis of your interest in constitutional monarchies. Was it studying royal lines of succession? Was it an interest in heraldry that any normal 14-year-old boy would have? Where did your interest start?
Look, I don't think that I'm as normal as perhaps most 14-year-olds that do study heraldry, actually. My interest in monarchy is probably a little more unconventional, dating the secretary for ACM at the time.
Yes.
Yes. A lot of people really got into the monarchy when they saw Pippin Middleton's backside during the royal wedding as well.
It created some interest too, but Tony Abbott asked me the same question. I told him it was because I was dating the secretary, and he turned around and said to me, "Well, Jai, the sex is always a good motivator."
Yes, indeed. Well, yes. Now, in your experience, Jay, young people, as you say, are simply not interested. They have, however, seemed to have fallen for the lies of the Greens. Have you noticed that those sorts of extremist ideologies are popular with uncritical people in their early 20s?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what we can put our finger on that to be. I think largely we can put it down to things like different symbols of the crown being removed from schools and so on. If people don't grow up with these things, of course, they're not going to appreciate them. So, where we have radical sort of agendas in schools these days, that's what people grow up with, and they tend to gravitate towards that, I suppose, which is not a good thing.
For you, Jay, is it, obviously if we elect a president, if we gave it over to Triple J listeners, it'd be bloody John Butler or Missy Higgins
yes.
running the country or someone like that. But is it a question for you of stability that if we, if we have like an Eddie Maguire,
forbid.
And we change the flag to a magpie or something, is that your interest in constitutional monarchy?
Well, to me, it's having something that's beyond just an immediate term that people are interested in. You see, for example, what's happening at the moment with the present government, and they're just doing whatever they need to do to cling on to power. To have something that sort of sits above that and to make sure that they stay in line is not a bad thing to have. So to me, it's sort of the continuing development of it. And it really comes down to, I suppose, if you look at the Burkean principles of democracy and all of these institutions that have served over time, it's the developmental nature of monarchy compared to just establishing a republic, which you pull out, you know, whatever's popular at the time.
Indeed. Well, the establishment of a republic certainly doesn't answer any question that's being asked at the moment. It doesn't solve a problem that its proponents allege exists. Would you agree with that, Jay?
Oh, absolutely. But look, for example, if you want an indication of support for the monarchy at the moment, and this is why the agenda will get nowhere for a republic, is the support, particularly amongst the youth, and again, I said that's due to probably largely apathy, and also the elderly. It's only the spike in the middle that are interested with baby boomers. Our Facebook page has 20,000 fans, and if you compare that to GetUp, which of course you'd be quite familiar with,
yes,
is exactly the same amount of likes.
Yes.
Jay, do you think, you know, obviously, you know, the Greens and the ALP, you know, kind of dream of a greedy grasp for power, but do you think you can be left-wing and for the monarchy?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at certainly amongst our supporters, we have people from the Labor Party, we have people from the Liberal Party, and, you know, all across the political spectrum. So, look, this is something that sits, as I said, outside of politics. It doesn't matter what your politics are. I think that there's a place for the monarchy in regards to all of those.
Well, you mentioned Tony Abbott, who is, of course, a devout Catholic, and yet here he is as one-time head of the ACM and a huge proponent of the monarchy. So it clearly, support for the monarchy is a broad church, is it not?
It certainly is. In fact, all of our executive directors, minus myself, have been Catholics. So we had Tony Abbott, and there was Kerry Jones, more recently Thomas Flynn, all devout Catholics. And I suppose I'm sort of breaking a trend in that respect.
That's disappointing, isn't it, Sterling?
Yes, well, we don't want the ACM armed with nuclear weapons any time. That's all I'd say.
Jay, are you going to be doing anything for the Queen's visit, mate? Are you going to sort of go along and meet her, or maybe, you know, accompany her to Moonee Valley to see the Cox Plate?
Look, I don't know how far luck can go these days. I was fortunate enough to have met Prince William when he was here in January of last year. Well, let's just see whether we extended an invitation to any functions that occur, of course.
How was Prince William? Did you have a good meeting?
Our office was fortunate enough that we got, I think it was three tickets to go along. And then they phoned me back a few hours later and said, well, look, we'd be delighted if you joined Prince William on the head table. So I actually was sitting sort of a couple of people away from him and had a chance to have a good chat to him for about 5 minutes or so. And I found him to be genuinely interested in Australian issues.
Yes.
And no, he's a really interesting sort of bloke.
Well, what will delight all of us monarchists, Jay, is the spectacle of professed Republicans tripping over themselves to be photographed with the Queen or to simply touch the hem of her garment.
Look, absolutely. And we always issue this warning to our supporters when they want to go and sort of see the Queen in some line or, you know, whatever to catch a glimpse of her. And we say, well, look, firstly, you need to do your research. Find out where she's going to be, have a look at the agenda and so on. But then we always caution them and we say, well, look, make sure that you don't stand between Republicans and the royalty, especially the politicians, because exactly for that reason, they'll be knocked over in the rush.
Indeed.
It was.
Well
and,
said.
And we remember Paul Keating, Jay, with his hands all over the Queen, the lecherous hands, the wandering hands just, you know, creeping down a lower back. I like to think is one of the lowest points of Australian public life.
It was
life,
sexual
mate.
Assault.
Well, someone said to our national convener, David Flint, a similar question and said, well, how do you greet the Queen? And David said, well, of course, you wait for her to offer your hand. And he then said that, of course, you wouldn't kiss the hand because you never know where that'll lead.
Well said. Well said.
Exactly,
from,
Jay.
From a man noted for his humour. Jay Martinkiewicz, what's your background, Jay?
Well, I'm actually half Hungarian and half Welsh, although I was born here. My ancestry is half Hungarian and half Welsh. That's an interesting mix.
Indeed.
And I suppose there's a lot of history in terms of monarchies between both of those countries.
Indeed, and the Welsh side is no doubt embarrassed by Julie Gillard.
Well, I suppose that depends where you sit on politics, but I think that you'll find that my parents are.
All right, Jay. Well, thank you very much for joining us, mate. And, you know, and the preparations for the Queen's visit, hopefully not a last, but a lot of people are saying it might be in full swing, definitely on restoring the balance. All the best.
I've certainly been saying that for the last three visits, and I don't think that we can make any assumptions at all that it'll be her last visit.
Indeed. Thank you, Jay Martinkiewicz, Executive Director of Australians for Constitutional Monarchy.
Restoring the balance.
Proudly using non-union labour.
Triple J.
This is a Restoring the Balance on Triple J with myself, young National Tom Tomlinson, young Liberal Sterling Addison. It is 2 hours, a conversation of no confidence. Sir Sterling, that was a song by the Bag Raiders, Snatchers, probably from Triple J, called Sunlight. Obviously some kind of propaganda for solar power there, mate.
Probably, and it sounds like they thieved or stole the tune. And nothing original in that, that's for sure. Well, what is original is the idea of robust feedback to a program on the ABC.
What's in the mailbag?
Tom, we do, of course, welcome feedback on this program, it being a two-way conversation, as you say, a conversation that expresses no confidence in the government, but certainly fulsome confidence in the idea of free speech while it exists. It is greatly imperiled at the moment, but that right to free speech has been exercised by Leanne Ford, who went to our Facebook page, Tom, and and left this missive. We were speaking last week about private schools v. public schools and the fact that a greater preponderance of people from private schools rightfully end up studying at university. And as I pointed out at the time, that there is a place for people from public schools at university. Somebody has to clean up the mess left by partying young liberals. And this point did not seem to go down well with Leanne, who she left a message on our Facebook page attempting to excoriate us for our views. Well, we knew she'd gone to a public school simply by looking at her full-on assault on the English language, where grammar was left a smoking wreck. And I've gone to the trouble of recording her comments, Tom. Here they are.
Restoring the balance, more like restoring the bias. The only thing to come out of your private schooling is a ridiculous, close-minded view of the world. Not to mention it buying your parents more time to be away from you. Obviously, public schools are there to balance out the sad, pathetic, arrogant population bred by private schools, without which the world would be a pretty shit place to live, thanks to people like you.
Yes.
Oh, language. That's arrogant in itself, mate, isn't it?
Well,
you know, she would have benefited from the house system that we had at Geelong Grammar.
Indeed.
I mean, that sort of language and that sort of grammar. I mean, I like to think people from private schools came from a wide range of life, you know, doing a wide range of things. We had, Sterling, we had our five-year, you know, school reunion at the penthouse suite at the Hyatt there in Melbourne for Geelong Grammar the other day, and we were discussing those things. You know, it's that kind of intolerance that you would find in state schools. And that, I think, is the reason why they shouldn't be at university, mate.
Well, indeed. And I think Leanne is greatly hurt by the fact that she never earned house colours for lacrosse. And maybe if she had, she may be a better person and not having to resort to barbs and insults and starting sentences in the lower case, which, of course, betrayed her low breeding.
Now, we've got a few other mailbag issues for you, Sterling.
Yes.
This is from Dan. Dan has written, can I get your thoughts on the Big Day Out lineup, please? There's no Casey Chambers, John Williamson or James Blundell. Well, Sterling, I have to say, I thought the Big Day Out lineup was something that occurred at a police station after the sniffer dogs had been through, mate.
Yes.
Just looking at the lineup here at Soundgarden, Kanye West have heard of those. No one else. Friends of Romba. That's not even a word, is it? Apparently they're on. Does it really matter who's on at the Big Day Out?
Well,
it's just a chance for people to wear ridiculous clothing, get off their face and listen to awful music. That's why I go to B&S ball, Sterling.
Well, that's a celebration of more sound Australian values, of course. The Big Day Out thinks, it prides itself, it deludes itself into thinking it's somehow countercultural, where values inimical to Australia are celebrated. As you said, the flag cannot be worn there. Well, that's a big no-no. But we like to think that we're at the moment attempting to promote the park life, the conservative musical festival.
The Regent Park Life.
The Regent Park Life.
We'll see who we can get on that next week. Here's another one, Sterling, and this is a disappointing question. It's from Dan Usher, mate, and he writes, do you guys do bonk song dedications? You know, Triple J have done their bonking songs in the past, yes. Sterling. You know, the songs people like to bonk to, obviously, off their face. You know, and I wouldn't even be surprised if it was same-sex bonking songs on this station.
Well,
I mean, a man and a woman bonking would be probably too conservative for half the blokes on here.
Well, that discriminates, you see, the act of coitus between a man and a woman, which could organically lead to procreation. Well, that discriminates against those who cannot do that. So that should be banned.
Exactly, and I'll give you a good song to bonk to, Sterling, and this will shock a lot of Triple J listeners. Why don't you bonk to a wedding march?
Yes.
How's that?
Yes.
Get married first. Another question. This is for you, Sterling, from Peter Caporoso. He writes, now that Dr. Philip Nitschke has permission to import Nembutal,
yes.
Can compulsory euthanasia for the over 60s as a carbon reduction measure be far away? Is it just a coincidence that they are overwhelmingly coalition voters? Now the communists have seized control of the TGA as well as the ABC. How long until we rename Canberra Ho Chi Brown City?
Well, comment is superfluous, I would argue. Although the Greens, voluntary euthanasia is clearly a stalking horse. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but nobody who has the wisdom of the years of 60 summers on this earth could possibly vote Green.
Mm.
So they are more often than not conservative voters. So this is part of a Green eugenics program that will see the excision of older Australians from the polity, meaning that all we are left with is dunderheaded 18-year-olds voting Greens, thus securing their illegitimate grasp on power.
Exactly, Sterling. And I like to see that the ALP tactics of taking away pokies and lawn bowls coverage, mate, is just a way of taking away the will of old people to live.
Correct.
And I think once you take away their hope, I think they'll just stick Nembutal on the PBS and they'll probably euthanise themselves.
Well,
I reckon that's basically the plan.
Well, they'll all be, they're called Jim Jones style, they'll all be summoned to a sports arena somewhere and given little cups of the stuff handed out by Bob Brown, cackling madly.
Restoring the Balance Re-Education Tutorial Number 63, Landslide.
A landslide is a geological phenomenon which includes a wide range of ground movement, such as rock falls, which can occur in offshore, coastal and onshore environments. Geologists find it extremely difficult to predict landslides due to the unpredictability of the Earth's crust and weather. Despite this, Anthony Green has predicted a huge landslide in the Canberra region, anytime between now and 2013. The landslide is expected to be unprecedented in its size and could tragically claim 50 or 60 casualties. Hopefully more.
Restoring the balance.
Let the free market decide.
Triple J.
Triple J, restoring the balance. Young National Tom Tomlinson, myself, young Liberal Sterling Addison. Tom, that was Joelistix. He's a rapper from Melbourne.
Awful language in that. I was embarrassed.
Well, no doubt.
He's probably listening.
Well, no doubt he probably writes his lyrics with spray cans as he graffitis in laneways, which is something of a tourist attraction in Melbourne, and obviously has the patois of the rapper when he says, I'm a, instead of I'm going to. Yes, very authentic. Very shortly, we speak to Julian Burnside, QC, him of the ad hominem attack on Tony Abbott via Twitter. That and so much more will be covered.
Now, Sterling, as many of us know in the agricultural industry, and I'm sure consumers are now aware of, there's a meat war going on between Coles and Woolies at the moment.
Yes, Ed, I will point out, Tom, that there are people who buy non-Wagyu mince. These people exist.
Well, and they're suffering. Well, no, they're actually benefiting, Sterling, because this is a third war Coles and Woolies have had, mate.
Yes.
The first was the milk war, remember, where you know, when they were flogging the stuff for a buck a litre?
I still have flashbacks, yes.
Yeah, the second was the plum war. That wasn't as well publicised, but it hit the whole stone fruit community really hard. Okay, now the meat war is going on, mate. Woolies have slashed their lamb legs a while back. Now Coles have retaliated. They've trimmed $7 a kilo from mince shops and lamb racks. It's about 28% cheaper for people who like to rack up. I mean, that's, and they're in heaven, Sterling. They're benefiting. But you know who's really caught in this sandwich, mate? That's the local butchers and farmers. They're the ones being bulk gunned and sold down the slop strain, Stirling.
Yes,
and they
indeed
need to be protected. I mean, we call for protectionism here at the National Party. These guys need to be protected. And this war will escalate, Stirling. Mark my words. Coles and Woolies, they'll continue to undercut each other. And soon it's going to get so bad that they'll be bloody throwing chops at people as they walk in the door.
Well,
shoving half a kilo of mince down your pants as you go down aisle 8.
Well, my comment is this. I ask you, Tom, is this meat war or a total meat war? Because in a total meat war, even vegetarian non-combatants are unsafe. It will consume all before it. But I would urge all Triple J listeners, in the name of thrift, to seek a better deal from their providor. And buttonhole your providor and demand if he can offer you a more reasonable discount on your milk-fed Victorian veal.
Mate, I don't think anyone eats meat listening to Triple J, mate. That's my gut feeling. But it's time for the meat industry and local butchers to step up, Stirling. And this is what I proposed at a Young Nationals branch meeting at Charleville last week. I'm proposing, and this might sound stupid, but I'm proposing for a series of mobile abattoirs to travel the burbs, offering meat to the consumers, direct, Stirling, fresh yes. and cheap. You obliterate transportation costs, okay? This is going to keep the prices down. You know, I'm talking meat Mr. Whippy Van style. You know, call it Mr. Snippy or Sloppy or Gutty, yeah. whatever the name.
Yes.
You know, instead of green sleeves, you can bash out bar black sheep. Kids can line up, get a freshly slaughtered hind quarter. Parents yes. can get their roast. You can get sausages. You can mince the stuff yourself, Stirling.
Yes.
You can get knee deep in the stuff. You know, because it's just disrespectful. If I was a lamb, okay, despite the fact I'm not going to enjoy my life, it might be some solace to me to know that I'm going for $42 a kilo.
Yes.
But once I start giving you away for $20, $30, that's just an insult.
Well, this is the free market at work, Tom. This is what people in the National Party will simply never understand. These are the interaction of supply and demand. And if the consumer benefits, then that is good, surely, and that is exerting downward pressure on inflation.
It's a monopoly, though, Stirling. It's a meatopoly. It's time to get on side of the butchers, mate. Let's put the carn back into carnivores, if you know what I mean.
Well.
You know, people there, they're butchering, they're slaughtering, and they're getting sold down the river, Stirling. There'll be people who will be marching in this war, okay? There'll be veterans who'll be marching in the meat war in 10 years' time who stood up for the mincers, for the gutters, for the bulk gunners, for the sloppers, for the water blasters, for the compressors.
Yes.
The awful mincers.
Yes,
people, these are the people that we need to stick up for.
People marching behind signs saying, "I fought for Iraq." Yes,
exactly.
Indeed.
Now, I fought for our rats.
Yes, indeed. Now what you need to do then, Tom, is to mobilise the population. You need to stop them from feasting on cheap meat and get them to care about the issue at hand. I fear you have it all before you because I was talking to my fiancée Penny about this and about the standards I demand from my vitola, my supplier of products, meat products, and she rather astonishingly looked at me and said, "Stirling, I'm not fussy about where I get my meat."
I'm not surprised, mate.
New from Restoring the Balance Records, it's the best of question time in the Senate. All your favourite speeches, interjections and points of order from the 70s, 80s, 90s and today. 2 hours of classic debates and memories, going all the way back to John Button's Motor Industry Development Plan in 1984. And for the first time, all your best-loved senators, old and new, in the one collection.
I am aware of alternative policy. Let me, excuse me, Senator Kim Ilkar, I am speaking. Now,
Order. Senator Brandis, you will address the Senator by his proper name.
From Nick Minchin's smash hit maiden speech in 1993 to the timeless classic of Erica Betts getting named by the acting Madam Deputy President. Perfect for road trips, the best of question time in the Senate allows you to wind down the windows and crank out a block of long non-stop Wong. Ring our toll-free number today, you'll get 50% off our companion album, The Best Senate Estimate Committee Hearings of 1983. The best of question time in the Senate. Taking the easy out of easy listening.
Restoring the balance.
Because you're never fully dressed without a national flag.
Triple J.
This is Restoring the Balance with myself, young National Tom Tomlinson, and young Liberal Sterling Addison. 2 hours of conversation of no confidence, Sterling. That song was called Boy with a Coin by Iron and Wine. Good to see a good natural resource like iron on the youth network, Sterling.
Yes, indeed. Well, we support it. We support any ferrous material on this program, so long as it's sold and converted to iron products here and exported. Mm. Well, speaking of things being sent overseas and things being received from overseas, refugees, they have an advocate in the form of Julian Burnside, QCAO. He of the immoderate tweet when he tweeted pedos in speedos. It's blown up. One could say a spectacular own goal in the culture wars. Tom, Julian Burnside joins us on the phone now. Good evening.
G'day,
Mr. Burnside. Your tweet, which you apologised to Tony Abbott for, the tweet itself contained no reference to the preferred Prime Minister. Why did you apologise directly to him, Mr. Burnside?
Okay, so I'll explain quickly. I use my iPad for tweeting on the occasions when I do tweet at all, but a message came through on my mobile phone from someone I'd never heard of, and it made some sort of fairly weak pun about pedophile priests. And a couple of days earlier, I'd seen on a BBC program a reference to pedos in speedos, which is sort of an equally weak pun, and I just sent that back to whoever this person was. I then went into a meeting, and a couple of hours later, I came out and found that that wasn't a reply to a text. It was actually a response to a tweet. And there was that tweet in amongst tweets that I had sent about a book about Abbott,
yes,
in which I was critical of Abbott. And I mean, you know, I'm not stupid enough not to notice that people would think I was talking about him when in fact I wasn't. And that's when I immediately sent out, I think, two or three apology tweets explaining that I was not talking about him and I don't think that of him. And, you know, well, there's other things about him I'd criticise. Certainly not, that's not one of them. I also, by the way, I contacted his office by email and explained to them what had happened and apologised. And I expect that my message got through to them before they knew what had happened. So, you know, the interesting thing, I got an email yesterday from the person who had sent the original message to me.
Yes.
And this person had obviously seen the sort of sudden surge in activity. And turns out there's a woman who lives in London who had actually never heard of Tony Abbott and who was equally surprised as I was when she saw what had come of it. So there you are. Can I take the opportunity of saying yet again, I'm very sorry if Tony Abbott or anyone thought that I was talking about him, because I absolutely do not believe that of him. I don't like him, but I certainly don't believe that of him.
Can I ask Julian just about, you know, the Andrew Bolt case? Obviously, you know, Boltster, he writes in a very colourful way, you know, and, you know, sure, he loves to chuck stuff up against the wall and see what sticks, and that's what Australia loves about him. I mean, do you think that it stifles right to free speech in Australia?
Look, I don't. Can I say it's complicated, but the Racial Discrimination Act prohibits saying things that would tend to vilify people by virtue of their race. I mean, that's summarising very roughly. It also has an exception for things said in good faith, okay? Now, obviously, Andrew Bolt argued good faith, but the judge said that the good faith argument didn't work because he'd got his facts wrong, plainly wrong, and he knew that it would humiliate or hurt them, and that it had. Now, you know, we've all always recognised that there are limits to free speech. You know, you can't shout fire falsely in a crowded theatre. You can't defame people. Those are limits to free speech, which everyone understands. And while the Racial Discrimination Act introduces a new and relatively untested limit to free speech, it's one which I can understand. Whether it's too tight or not, I'm not sure. But the judgment, I should say, is actually fairly uncontroversial because all it does is to very carefully apply that provision of the Racial Discrimination Act.
Mr. Burnside, can you please enunciate the difference to me and other people who don't understand the difference in attacking somebody on the basis of their race which is unacceptable. But attacking somebody on the basis of their deeply held religious convictions is somehow okay. So your description of Abbott in that new book by Dr. Mitchell, yeah, where him leading us back to the dark ages, of, as you have said, of her basically making an ad hominem attack with no reference to the subject of the book himself. Can you explain, because religion does loom very large in Mitchell's book, and you have endorsed this book, how is attacking him on the basis of his religious beliefs different from attacking somebody on the basis of their racial identity?
I'm actually not attacking him on the basis of his religious belief. My principal criticism of Mr. Abbott is that despite clearly having well-developed and, I assume, conscientiously held religious belief, he then acts in ways which contradict those beliefs. That's the really fundamental concern I have, apart from his admitted tendency to be a little careless with the truth. Now, it's the fact that, for example, I mean, you know, he could not have forgotten the parable of the Good Samaritan, and yet his attitude to those few boat people who managed to wash up on our shores is utterly irreconcilable with the parable of the Good Samaritan. Now, what does that say about his religious beliefs, or what does it say about his mental framework? That's the thing that really concerns me, and I'd be very interested to hear his answer to that. But it troubles me to think that a person who aspires to lead the country is willing to wear on their sleeve firmly held religious beliefs and then act in a way that's inconsistent with them.
Well, you could make the same argument with John F. Kennedy when he was leader of the United States by committing troops to Vietnam to kill people. This is the unfortunate business of being in politics, is it not? I mean, do you rule out anybody with Catholic convictions from entering politics?
No, not at all. But I think it would be a good thing for them to explain why it is that they believe one thing and do a different thing. Now, I'm not going to try and get into the Kennedy and Vietnam War thing. Of course, we know the Vietnam War was a serious mistake. I understand that they believed at the time that it was a strategic necessity, but then we were told that about the Iraq War as well. So, you know,
a just war.
Hard to know. Well, that's what was said, but I think we know better, at least in relation to Iraq and probably in relation to Vietnam.
Julian, I know you've acted for Alan Bond and Rose Porteous in the past. So my question to you is, how angry are you about this new tax on mining? You know, the tax that will gut our country and not keep mining as strong as it should be.
Is that what's called a loaded question? I think the mining industry is probably big enough to be able to afford it. I actually think that the mining industry probably should pay significantly more tax than other parts of Australian industry, because what they're doing is taking out of the ground those parts of the country that are valuable enough to sell overseas. They make enormous profits, and at least a significant chunk of those profits, I think, ought to come back for the good of Australians generally. And saying that, I'll tell you, I pay a lot of tax, okay? I'm not wanting a tax break, but I would like to see people who are less well off getting the benefits of the massive wealth that the mining industry has, and which, if redistributed to the benefit of, more schools, better hospitals, all that sort of thing, I think it would improve the whole country. Now, these resources belong to the country. Why shouldn't they go to the benefit of the country?
Indeed, that's
it. You've got to set up your trust fund better, yes, Julian, if you're paying a lot of tax. Let me give you a hot tip.
We'll speak off air about that. That does indeed sound like a dangerous idea, Julian Burnside QC. Speaking of which, you are presenting a lecture at the Festival of Dangerous Ideas. Can you expand on what you have chosen to present?
Actually, the topic was given to me by the organisers, and the topic is something like, we care more about animals on boats than people. Fairly obvious idea by reference to the Four Corners program and refugee policy. And I'm using that as a sort of springboard to a couple of other ideas, which would probably take too long to talk about on air.
Yes.
Right at the moment.
And we wouldn't agree with any of them anyway.
No. I hope not. And I'll tell you what. I really quite like it when people who disagree with my ideas stand up and say so and explain why. Because there's two things. The first is that if their ideas are formed on the basis of a misunderstanding of facts, well, then we can talk about that and maybe bring them up to speed on the facts. And if it turns out that my ideas are plainly wrong, I would rather know that sooner than later.
Yes. Well, we can tell you sooner, Julian, now on this show.
Everything you believe is wrong.
Yeah, well, okay. Thank you.
There we go. One question that wasn't clarified on an interview you did recently in Melbourne with John Fain. He put it to you. He asked you why Julian Assange's right to free speech was somehow greater than Andrew Bolt's, and you said you didn't expand much. Can you use this opportunity to maybe elucidate?
Sure. I think his premise was wrong. I don't for a minute believe that Andrew Bolt's right of free speech is either greater or less than Julian Assange's. The thing about Assange is that he's being jumped on because of putting stuff up on WikiLeaks, but the world's press reran the same material and put it in front of a much, much larger audience, and no one is attacking the owners of the mainstream press around the world who did that. Julian Assange is being attacked for doing what everyone else in the world or everyone else in the media also did. Now, I don't understand that at all, and I suspect here's my little dangerous, careless prediction. You know that Bradley Manning is the bloke who is suspected of having leaked the material that found its way onto WikiLeaks.
Yes.
Bradley Manning has for months now been held in a brig in Quantico, I think, in the United States. He's been mistreated very badly. He's being held naked in his cell for long periods, ostensibly for his own protection, which is rather weird. His lawyers are having increasing difficulty making contact with him. I suspect that they are trying to break down Bradley Manning with Guantanamo-style tactics so that he will say something that implicates Assange, and America will then try to extradite Assange to America in order to try him for treason. That's my belief. And it's not because of anything that came out in those leaks, which were reprinted by the Murdoch press and all the other major press organizations around the world. It's because he has shown them doing stuff like the killing of civilians by a US helicopter in Iraq. I think that he has seriously embarrassed a number of governments, and of course that's the ultimate crime in modern democracies, is to embarrass your government.
Well, we should point out they were printed too by Fairfax. They certainly they did their part with WikiLeaks too. So if you're alleging blame, there's plenty of it to go around.
Oh, yeah. It's every mainstream media organisation in the world republished the same material. But no one has suggested for a moment that they should be the subject of the sort of attack that Assange is facing. And you mark my words, I think he will end up being extradited to America, where they can prosecute him for encouraging Bradley Manning to leak. You see, if Bradley Manning is the person, and I don't know whether he is or not, if he is, what he did was a criminal offence. But there is no doubt at all that republishing what he leaks is not a criminal offence. And we know that from the Pentagon papers and the Waterhouse tapes. You know, the free speech provisions in the US Bill of Rights mean that unless the publication causes an immediate, clear and present danger to the safety of the country, then you're entitled to publish.
Well, it's good to know that the right to free speech still exists in some part of Western liberal democracies. Julian Burnside, QC, thank you for your time this evening.
Good on you. Thanks a lot.
Restoring the Balance, Re-education Tutorial Number 23, Public Hospitals.
Public hospitals are medical facilities owned by state governments but funded federally. The public system is under chronic strain, due mainly to lengthy stays from Greens male MPs, who frequently have to visit emergency wards after, quote, slipping on something in the shower. Whilst in hospital, Greens male MPs will often demand frivolous cosmetic surgery and testicle tucks, funded by you.
Restoring the Balance with Sterling and Thomas.
Constitutional Monarchists of the Month.
That's Kimbra with Good Intent. This is Restoring the Balance on Triple J with myself, young National Tom Tomlinson, young Liberal Sterling Addison. It is the conversation of no confidence, but right now...
And now it's time for the Restoring the Balance What's on Guide.
If I can direct listeners' attention to what I think is a bold social experiment, Tom, it is the combination of the world of the arts, in particular music and 1940s-themed musicals, with the opera of the masses, something called football, or Australian Rules Football. John Thorne, a noted Melbourne musician, has written with Kate Schmidt a musical about footy tipping.
Really?
Yes. So you've participated in footy tipping. I tend to avoid such things. I normally go high court deliberation tipping in my place of work at the law firm which I work in. But this is a musical called Kiss of Death. It's from October the 1st to the 8th, and it's at the Arts House North Melbourne Town Hall. So so go along. If you like music, you'll enjoy the music. If you like footy, such as it is, you may enjoy that too.
Yes, well, as you know, Sterling, I was top of the class in the mining industry profit tipping competition.
Yes, $22 billion.
$22 billion, yes. I was leading in that, but footy tipping, great Australian pastime, especially if there's money involved.
Indeed.
Restoring the balance.
We resent this waste of government money.
Restoring the balance on Triple J with young National Tom Tomlinson, myself, young Liberal Sterling Addison. The soundtrack to Insolvency there. Portugal, The Man, the name of the band, the song Got It All, This Can't Be Living Now.
In our prayers.
Tom, it is, of course, Sunday, a day of reflection, a chance to perhaps take stock before the week begins anew and reflect upon the blessings of our Protestant Saviour. And so this time of each week, we ask you to remember in your prayers the following. I pray for patience in dealing with the artisans, Tom, who are currently installing an alcove into my study, upon which will sit a bust of Menzies and Howard together.
Oh, okay, well, they're causing you trouble again, are they, mate?
Well, it's mainly Penny. Now, when I return home, she's constantly telling me about the 19-year-old apprentice who is one of these artisans, and she refers to them as handymen. I say, they're not handymen, they're artisans. She said, they must be handymen because I keep giving them handy jobs.
Yes.
And they're not there for the sake of hand jobs, I keep telling them. They're there to actually install something into the building, not a series of trivial tasks around the house. So I pray for understanding and forbearance in dealing with Penny and the two men involved.
Just pray hard. That's all I can say.
Who would you like us to remember in our prayers?
I'd like to remember in your prayers the entire states of New South Wales, South Australia, Vic and Tasmania, who are undergoing at the moment, Sterling, one of the greatest moral challenges of our time, and that is daylight savings. It's ridiculous. A yuppie invention. Yes. Milking cycles have been disrupted. Harvests have been thrown out. All for what, Sterling? So inner city hipsters can stay up later drinking imported beers, buying drugs and talking about carbon emissions and gay marriage.
Yes.
That's what it's for. Guess what, guys? Not all of us wake up every morning hungover at midday with a member of the socialist left between the sheets. Some of us have to work. And guess what, guys? When we need to work, guess what we need? Light. That's right, we need light. You ever try to castrate a bull in fading light, Sterling?
Yeah.
It's not pretty.
Yes.
It's not pretty, mate. And they keep extending it every year. Do you think when Captain Cook first set up colony in Australia, he said, you know, guys, we need to move the clock forward an hour so myself and the others in the garrison can work on our tans?
Well, maintain that rage, Tom. It is something worthy of the petitioning of our Lord, for sure. Should the right to free speech not be extinguished between now and next Sunday, we will visit ourselves upon your ears then.
Yes, exactly. We'll be back at 9 or 8 or 7.30 or 6.30. We've all been thrown out by daylight savings. I don't even know what time we've got to rock up next week, Sterling. It's that bad.
ABC
what time is
o'clock.
It now?
Just
ABC o'clock.
Yes, indeed. We will see you next week. Goodbye.